These Days.
Kids These Days.
This is Kids These Days.
Greetings from the KSKA FM studios in Anchorage. Today on the program, we're discussing special education all across our great state. My guests this hour talk from professional and personal experience about programs for young Alaskans with special needs. We'll report on resources for caregivers with kids too young to receive special education services through the schools. And we'll hear the story of one girl with cerebral palsy who's off to the University of Washington on her own this year. That and a personal story from one prolific KTD blogger. Stay with us. Hello, everyone. I'm Shanna Sheehy, host of Kids These Days. Kids These Days considers each episode an opportunity for community conversation, so please weigh in. You can do that by going to kidsthesedays.org and commenting on this program or others you can find there. Each week, we make the whole radio program available to you for free. This hour, I'm joined by two knowledgeable women. Teresa Holt recently became the Operations Director at the Governor's Council on Disabilities and Special Education. Before her current position, she staffed the Special Education Advisory Panel, which advises the State Department of Education and Early Development on issues related to special education. Prior to working at the Council, Teresa was a special education advocate at the Disability Law Center in Anchorage, working with families to ensure their rights under the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, or IDEA. She is also the parent of a child who received special education services when he was in school. Thanks to you today, Teresa, for being with us.
Sure, my pleasure.
Julie Broyles is a parent of three children, one who has Down syndrome. She's an active member of the Alaska chapter of the National Down Syndrome Congress. Broyles is also a special education teacher at Service High School in Anchorage. She's been a member of the Governor's Council on Disabilities and Special Education for 6 years and is a strong advocate for individuals with disabilities. And thank you, Julie, for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
And, you know, I'd like to find out, since both of you are associated with the Governor's Council on Disabilities and Special Education, maybe quickly, Teresa, you could tell us about that.
Sure. The council is mandated under three federal laws. So we're the DD council for our state. And basically under that law, we look at services for folks with developmental disabilities.
Okay.
We're also the special ed advisory panel for our state, which, of course, looks at special education for the state and advises the Department of Education on special ed issues. And we're also the Interagency Coordinating Council on Disabilities for Infants and Toddlers. And that looks at the early intervention system for children birth to five who have disabilities.
So you're really kind of covering the whole gamut of age spectrum there with,
yes,
with people who would need some extra assistance and the policies around that?
Yes. Yes. Excellent. We make policies and system change on a statewide level.
Excellent. Well, let's start at the beginning. If there's a caregiver out there who, you know, is thinking that they need to find out if their child has special needs, you know, where does someone get started in the process of the services that are provided?
Well, I guess it depends on the age of the child. As Teresa was saying, we have programs available for that birth through three age. And then, obviously, at that age, they would probably start with their pediatrician and maybe be referred to our infant learning program that would provide services. And usually those are home-based services, though they can be done at the center or even in a child care setting.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if that child is in school and the parent is having concerns, typically that process will be started by the teacher, though the parents can also bring forward a student that or their child and the concerns that they have for their child. But hopefully at that point that the classroom teacher may have noticed that the child is struggling, whether that's in their reading or their writing or math, or sometimes even behaviors. And hopefully that, you know, in place that teacher has already been implementing a research-based curriculum and has been conducting universal screening for the entire class, and at that point maybe realize that this particular child might be demonstrating some delays in some areas, and would address that. And so with some interventions within the regular education classroom. And usually that's kind of the start of it.
So is that something that most teachers will do, probably starting with kindergarten? You said universal sort of screen where they're just keeping an eye out for any kids who might be showing some signs of struggling to learn some of the things.
Yes. And then once they've implemented any of those intervention strategies, they will continue to monitor and document the student's progress. And if, say, the student isn't responding to those intervention strategies, they might try some different ones. And if a student is not making the gains that they should be in spite of all of these interventions, and then usually that's when that student is referred for a special education evaluation. And of course, a parent can start this process too if the parent is concerned that their child is not reaching those milestones that their other children are, that they might come to the teacher and express those concerns. And that same process would happen, that the teacher would first want to look at what are the gaps, mm-hmm. and what are the students' needs, mm-hmm. and address those.
So a special education intervention, can you explain to me what that is?
Well, this is Teresa. I just want to say there are a couple of things under the law that children have to meet certain requirements. So you have to have one of 14 disabilities to get special ed services. So that's things like autism, to be deaf, have an emotional disturbance, a learning disability. There's a whole list of them. So you have to meet that criteria. And each of those 14 categories has specific criteria that's different for each category. And then you also have to need some kind of specialized intervention.
Okay.
So Julie was explaining is if the teacher in the regular ed classroom is doing all these things and it's not working, then probably that child's going to need some specialized intervention.
Okay. And so is it also possible if there are these 14 recognized things and each one has criteria and then they have a specialized need, is it possible for a child to be diagnosed with one of those 14 things but then not actually have a specialized need?
Yes.
Does that happen often?
Not often, but it does happen.
Okay.
You know, the only time that we would implement the special education services is if that disability is affecting the student's learning.
Okay. So describe to me some of the special education services that would be available to children who do meet those criteria.
Well, we have a whole cascade of services that would be available to one of these students. So on one end of that spectrum, we've got accommodations within the regular education classroom. Say for an older child, that might mean modified assignments, use of some tools or resources to help them do assignments, whether that's word processing to get an essay written, or a voice-to-text program to help them write in the writing class. And then something that would be, say, the next step from that would be some pull-out services. So that child might need to be pulled from the regular education classroom to receive some resource support, in a resource classroom provided by the special education teacher or support staff. And again, providing supports with projects or assignments, testing. And then to take it a step further, that student that isn't quite enough for them, they might need to spend more time in a self-contained special education classroom, which means it's a classroom that's taught by a special education teacher, and it's four students who are on IEPs, and they are receiving direct instruction and usually in a smaller group setting.
Okay.
And we kind of run that entire spectrum, and the most extreme case would be in a residential facility where they're receiving services. So not even within a school setting,
right?
They're typically developing peers.
Teresa Holt, maybe you, Julie, just used the acronym IEP. Can you please explain that to our listeners?
Well, it stands for Individualized Education Program. So under the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, or the IDEA, as everybody calls it for short, a child who's eligible for special ed, a team of people sit down, including the parent, and the teacher, it might be the special ed teacher, it could be some physical therapists, occupational therapists, anybody who would be providing services to that child. They sit down and they create a plan. That plan has goals, it has objectives, it kind of talks about where the child is currently, and then they set those goals from that to where they want the child to be. And so that's a document that says, here's what the school is going to do for the child.
And then that document stays with the child as the child goes through different schools?
Mm-hmm. And okay. It gets renewed every year at least. But if something changes, you know, the team can get back together and make changes to the document.
And they call that, you know, special education is the term for this kind of education. And that sounds like very special attention also given to a child who has special needs, to have a whole team of people, as you describe, come together to figure out what's best for his or her education plan. How long has that that technique or that strategy been used in education?
IDEA was passed, it had a different name originally. It was Public Law 94-142, and it was passed in the early 70s. I don't know the exact year. So we've had it around for a pretty long time.
Mm-hmm. And is there, I'm imagining that there's evidence that this is a successful way to help kids get the education that they need.
Absolutely, and it's a really good way to document that it's working.
Mm-hmm.
Or not working and needs to be changed.
And every single year, as you say, mm-hmm. it gets revisited and changed mm-hmm. as needed.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think this is a good time, actually, to listen to something we've prepared for the program. Parents of all kids are their kids' best advocates. And perhaps special needs parents know that more deeply than others. But parents themselves may struggle to figure out what their kids need. At a recent parent talk sponsored by the Alaska-wide nonprofit THREAD, one mother talked about her concerns as her son Zachary started kindergarten this fall. He has cerebral palsy.
He's over at Rabbit Creek in the intensive needs classroom. That was kind of a journey trying to figure out where he should go. We started out in talking about maybe mainstreaming him with an aide. Then he started having seizures and kind of regressed a little bit. And then we talked about the extended resource classroom at, I believe, Willowcrest. But that classroom didn't have any physically disabled kids. There were a couple kids with autism and a couple kids with Down syndrome, and they there weren't any peers for him. He needs to see other kids with physical disabilities as well as that, and the teacher didn't know sign language, which is his primary means of communication, and they weren't able to add more help to the classroom so that he would be physically safe and able to participate at an appropriate level.
So when you introduced yourself, you said that you're trying to figure out what is a normal parent freak out versus special needs parent freak out, and, you know, sort of when to push and when to not push. Can you maybe kind of give me an example of what you were talking about when you said that? Like, what's something you've wondered, like, do I really push on this or do I not push on this? Or
certainly just, how much attention does he need? How much help does he need? I struggle with that at home too. I mean, I think independence is important, but he can do so much more. You know, is it more appropriate for him to knee walk down the hallway independently or to walk on his feet with an adult holding onto his shoulders? And, you know, at school, he definitely gravitates towards the adults. And so I really, you know, on one hand, I want him to be walking and having an adult help with his communication. But on the other hand, I know that there would be times that it would be appropriate for the adult to step back and let him develop on the social and emotional level. But so knowing, you know, when to, does he need a one-on-one aid or can he get by without it? You know, he, deciding which is more appropriate in which situation and what to write on the IEP. And
because you get to help make that plan develop that IEP plan. And so it's kind of like a team together. But you're, as a parent, trying to think, well, what do I push for? Should I push for this or push for that? Am I getting the
idea? Definitely, yeah. Like when we were at the other school and we did the intake at the extended resource classroom, I was really pushing. I said, there needs to be another adult in this classroom. He needs hands on him at all times or close enough to catch him. And they said, that's not going to happen. And I said, well, there is this other classroom. And I And I said, no. I said, if he's socially or emotionally unable to keep up in this classroom, then I would consider the intensive needs classroom. That's a lower level of stimulation. But if they can't accommodate him physically, if they can't keep him safe in this classroom, I said that would make me really sad if that was the reason that he had to transfer to the more restricted environment. So they said, well, we'll try it, and we can always switch him. And so I was, the next day I went and I told his preschool teacher through the Anchorage School District, I said, you know, if this is just a big circus act and you guys don't think he's going to succeed, I said, it's going to be stressful for everyone to have to switch him at first quarter. I don't want to set him up for failure. And I said, so, and they said, so you're willing to consider the intensive needs classroom? And I said, if you guys don't expect him to succeed in this one, then yes. Within 2 hours, they had him placed in the intensive needs classroom, which breaks my heart because they had no intention of him succeeding there. They just had to prove it to me because they have to put him in the least restrictive environment. But he's doing great at Rabbit Creek. It's a really great team. He's definitely on the higher level in the classroom. I mean, it depends on which aspect you look at. There's certainly kids that can walk, talk better than him. But, I stayed the first week with him, probably a little bit because I'm an overprotective parent rather than the disability. I knew they probably wouldn't kill him, but I wanted to make sure that they understood. I didn't want them over or underestimating him. So, for example, they held up two crayons in fine motor and asked him to point to which one he wanted. And I said, no, Zachary's fully capable of asking with his signs, blue crayon, please. And, you know, just encouraging them to push him to his full potential.
Sarah spoke with Kids These Days contributor Jessica Cochran at Parent Talk, a monthly discussion group facilitated by THRED, Alaska's Child Care Resource and Referral Agency. We'll hear more from Jessica's reporting there later. You're listening to Kids These Days. I'm Shanna Sheehy, and I'm talking today with Julie Broyles and Teresa Holt about special education in Alaska. If you have a question or comment, send it to mail@kidsthesedays.org. And Teresa Holt, would you respond? I'd like to hear your response to some of the concerns that Sarah, the mother in that piece, put forward with just, you know, thinking about this as a journey and trying to get her kid in the best circumstances for him to get the education she hopes he can.
Right. Well, there's a couple things that I wanted to say about that. The first is that the council works to create what we hope is a seamless system. So for a child who has some very obvious needs, hopefully they have already connected with the infant learning program and they receive those services in their home. And those are very different services than school services. And we work fairly hard to make sure that that transition from infant learning to preschool, and it sounds like she made that transition, goes pretty well. But I don't think we spend as much time looking at the transition from preschool to kindergarten, which is, again, another big step, which can be difficult. I think the other thing she talked a lot about was this idea of least restrictive environment. Mm-hmm. And that is a concept that comes from the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act and says that children need to be as close to the classroom with their regular peers in their home school as possible. And that, you know, really works out in many different ways. And I think that was where she was struggling with the choice of, you know, does she want him to be in a classroom closer to her? It sounds like her homeschool with her son's peers, maybe the neighborhood kids, mm-hmm. or whether the needs of her son are so specialized that he needs to be in a classroom where they can provide him more support and services. And so, you know, that's a choice that the team makes together. But there is a push to keep children as close to that regular education classroom where they would go if they did not have a disability.
And did her, she seemed satisfied, but also perhaps disappointed in the result that came from, you know, her or the team decision of where to place her son. Maybe Julie Broyles, do you have any insight into that? You have a child who has special needs. She has Down syndrome. Is that that feeling familiar?
It really is. On one hand, you want your child to be with their typically developing peers and given the opportunity to establish some of those friendships with their peers. At the same time, you want to make sure that they're okay because those are your babies. And I hear this all the time. You know, we'll have some families who want their children in. They actually prefer that more restricted environment because they want their kids to be in smaller classroom, more attention, more adults in the room, more supports. And then on the other hand, you've got families who don't want any of that. And they really want their kids in that regular education setting with the typically developing peers, whether or not it's best for the child. And I think that the default, as it should be, is to first go for the least restricted environment. But I know that, yeah, we struggle with that as well. Mm-hmm. And right now, Brendan is in a regular education class with pull-out resource support. But, you know, we're aware that eventually we'll need to go to a more self-contained setting.
Teresa Holt, you mentioned transitions and that there's focus on going from the transition for special needs kids from the home environment into a preschool environment. And then you say that, again, there's one in kindergarten, and I'm sure that that continues on all throughout the education process. We've prepared something today about those early years that I'd like to share now. Today's show is all about special education in Alaska, and it's also the debut of new reporting coming from our Early Education Desk. In partnership with THREAD, a statewide child care referral network, training, and advocacy organization, Kids These Days will periodically bring you stories about our littlest Alaskans. Finding the right child care for any kid can be tough, but there's added stress if you need to find someone who can keep your special needs child safe or deal with challenging behaviors. More and more children are being expelled from child care centers, leaving their parents struggling. From our Early Education Desk, KTD contributor Jessica Cochran has more.
At Tiny Thomas's home daycare, her two grandchildren have just finished lunch. The other kids for the day have gone home sick. Thomas has more than 15 years' experience working with children with special needs, so when she opened her home daycare in 2005, she listed that as her specialty. She cared for an autistic child for a while, and one who is blind.
Did everything on my own. I did research on the computer for the autistic child. I did have some experience in that from working at Alaska Children's Services. And as far as the blind kid was concerned, I had never worked with a blind kid before. And it was a challenge, but actually he did pretty well, and he took pretty well to the daycare. And I loved having him because it was such an experience for me to work with that type of kid.
Her third special needs child was the biggest challenge. At only 2 years old, he was already on medication and being treated for behavior issues, aggression, and defiance.
He had been in 20 different in-home daycares before he came to Tiny's Kid Care. And when he got here, he was here for almost 2 years, and to my knowledge, in the other daycares, the 20 that he was in, he lasted a maximum of 2 weeks.
With all her years of experience, Thomas was able to handle the boy by being firm and consistent, using timeouts and rewards. She did things a little differently with him than the other kids, and she made some changes to her home to accommodate him.
When I knew that I was going to take this little kid in, I did a few changes in the home because the mom had let me know, you know, types of things that he did with drapes. You know, he likes a heavyweight blanket when he lay down.
The child's family and Thomas were enrolled in the Alaska Inn program, a program that provides extra money for childcare providers who include special needs children in their programs. Julia Jackson, Director of Family Services for THREAD, says any family in Alaska who qualifies for child care assistance and has a child with a documented special need can apply. And documentation is pretty simple. A note from a doctor or behavior coach is enough.
The amount depends on the needs of the child, and so it ranges from 25% up to 100% of a subsidy of what they already receive in child care assistance. So this enables the provider to receive an amount that will enable them to attend training. It will enable them to purchase materials that will support that child's learning or special needs. It will enable them to accommodate the environment. Maybe they need to build a wheelchair ramp, or they need to change the arrangement of the room to accommodate a more quiet area for a child who has sensory needs, let's say, as an example.
Jackson says the program is underutilized in Alaska. Only 8 families in Fairbanks use it, 14 in Juneau. 26 in Anchorage. Under the program, the provider and the family will come up with a plan of care for that child, and THREAD will follow through to make sure the child's needs are being met during childcare. The process might also include a consultation. THREAD can send a specialist to the provider to work on how to address that child's developmental needs or handle their behavior. In fact, that consultation process is available to any family member or provider who is struggling with a child in a child care setting. Alicia Dever is THREAD's Director of Consultation.
We'll do an observation where we just observe the routines in the classroom and the child and the child care providers and, and kind of get a gist of what the needs are for that child and for the child care program. And then we have a meeting with the teachers and the director, typically, to discuss what the needs are and what they're wanting help with and assistance with. And so from there, we create a plan of action to ways that the program can support this child in care and help identify community resources.
THREAD's referral services help connect families with child care. The agency can do an enhanced referral to help find a provider who can meet any special needs. But it can be tough to find a good placement. More and more children are being kicked out of child care for disruptive behaviors. Providers worry about keeping the other kids safe. One parent at a recent meeting described her frustration when her daughter was repeatedly kicked out of daycare or suspended for a few days at a time. She'd have to take days off work to deal with it, and her daughter, who would rather be at home, quickly learned she got her way when she behaved badly. Parents Ephraim and Casey struggled to find a place for their son to go in the first place. They knew they needed a place that could handle his energy and aggression.
One place said that they would have to move him to the other room, but if he continued to fuss or anything, he'd be able to go home. He'd have to come home, or that they wouldn't be able to do that very often with him because they'd have to pretty much remove him from the program.
Two of their children now attend Little Tykes, a therapeutic daycare just for children with special needs, run by Anchorage Community Mental Health Services. The program sends staff to their home to make sure they're trying to respond to behaviors the same way at school and at home.
So we got our son in there for his behavioral problems, and then our daughter qualified for her behavioral problems, but also because she doesn't speak. And it's actually made a progress. Like, our son's been in there since right before his birthday in May. So much better. Our daughter's been in there since June, right before her birthday, and she's very sensitive, to the touch. You touch her the wrong way, she has this screech that will break glass. And she's getting a little better. She's starting to talk a little bit, but she still has a lot of aggression.
But the waiting list is long. There are other programs that take on special needs kids, and some children qualify to receive services through the Anchorage School District at age 3 through intensive needs preschool programs. But there are plenty who don't. Their disability or behavior isn't bad enough for the special programs, but it's too challenging for many daycare providers. Under a pilot program, THREAD and Anchorage Community Mental Health are doing some intensive consultations with child care centers, basically training their staff to deal with tough behaviors ahead of time. Tiny Thomas has some advice for providers, too. Stick with it and get the training you need.
Whatever you do, please don't take the child out of your care. It's us as the providers and as the teachers and the leaders that's taking care of them that have to train ourselves and get ourselves in a position to where we're able to help these children.
After all, Tiny says, a special needs child is still a child. They need you to be firm and consistent, and they need a lot of love. I'm Jessica Cochran.
The deadline for child care centers to apply for THREAD's intensive consultation program is September 23rd. Another resource for families with special needs children is Stone Soup Group. That's who connected Casey and Ephraim's family with Little Tykes Therapeutic Daycare. KSKA's Line 1 Your Health Connection recently featured the Stone Soup Group on its program. We'll link you to that show from our website at kidsthesedays.org. I'm Shanna Sheehy, and I'm talking with Julie Broyles and Teresa Holt today about special education in Alaska. And before we take a quick break, I wanted to give both of you a chance to respond to that story. I saw a lot of head nodding and head shaking while we were listening. Let's start with you, Julie.
Well, I was just thinking Tiny is a pretty remarkable
yes.
person and how fortunate that family is that they had found her. As a parent of a child with special needs, I can appreciate how difficult it is to find childcare for your child because of their unique needs, whether it's their communication difficulties or behavior. It takes a pretty special person who can take on that job. And considering you know, many of the students that I see, I know that my son's pretty easy, and even still, it's difficult to find assistance with childcare. And fortunately, I was able to stay home with him when I was younger, and we have family in town. But I know of many families who have gone through exactly what those families had gone through, of kids getting kicked out of daycare or having to take many days off of work to take care of their kids.
You can just imagine the stress of that.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's just one of the many reasons why there's such a high divorce rate among families who have kids with special needs.
Mm. Teresa Holt?
Yeah, I wanted to talk about a few of the things that are happening statewide. There is a leadership group that is working together with Early Intervention, THREAD, Head Start, and a few other groups to bring something called positive behavioral supports to daycares and preschools. Mm. And so we have received some federal technical assistance. There's a national center that works specifically on early childhood. And so they have been providing technical assistance to this leadership team, and we have done some pilot projects in Bethel, Bethel Head Start, Barrow Head Start. I'm trying to think where the other ones are. There's one in Anchorage that's run by Denali Family Services, which has, I think, 15% children with disabilities, and the rest are regular education peers, if you would, but they're not in school yet. And they've been providing technical assistance to those providers in teaching them how to deal with behaviors on a large scale, so that, you know, the entire community of Barrow preschool teachers are getting that. So I think that's really exciting to have happen in our state.
Will there be more communities to receive that benefit that you know of?
Originally, we started with three communities, and I think this year we're working up to 10. And the idea is hopefully to hit every community eventually.
Well, you're listening to Kids These Days on this listener-supported public radio station. This program is an independent production of the Content Producers Guild. It's made possible through a partnership with KSKA-FM Anchorage, where the program is recorded. I'm Shanna Sheehy, and the conversation today is about special education in Alaska. Our guests are Teresa Holt and Julie Broyles. I'll be talking more with them in the second half of the program. Still also to come this hour, we'll hear the inspiring story of one young woman with special needs who is college-bound, and we'll hear a personal story in another installment of our KTD On the Go feature. Stay with us for that, and you guessed it, more coming right up.
Well, if you want to sing out, sing out. And if you want to be free, be free. 'Cause there's a million things to be, you know that there are. And if you want to live high, live high. And if you want to live low, live low. 'Cause there's a million ways to go, you know that there are. You can do what you want, the opportunity's on. And if you find a new way, you can do it today. You can make it all true, and you can make it undo, you see. Ah, it's easy. Ah, you only need to know. Well, if you want to say yes, say yes. And if you want to say no, say no. 'Cause there's a million ways to go, you know that there are. And if you want to be me, be me. And if you want to be you. 'Cause there's a million things to do, you know that there are. You can do what you want, the opportunity's on. And if you find a new way, you can do it today. You can make it all true, and you can make it undo, you see. Ah, it's easy. Ah, you only need to know.
Kids These Days next time hosts an art showcase. We'll talk with Alaskans from the Alaska Arts Education Consortium about how the arts are incorporated into kids' educational experiences. And we'll feature a few upcoming young artists who are certain to impress. That and more next time on Kids These Days. We're back on Kids These Days. I'm Shanna Sheehy, and our topic today is special education in our state. I'm joined by Julie Broyles and Teresa Holt for our conversation. You can join in by sending an email to mail@kidsthesedays.org, or you can take part online on our website or Facebook page. Again, that's all at kidsthesedays.org. Well, let's get back to our conversation. We were talking before the break about opportunities and resources for kids even before they get to school. I want to begin this part of the conversation by focusing on education that's in elementary school and middle school and high school. And we've talked about some of the different places that kids with special needs can be found in our schools. And we've talked a little bit about why kids might be placed in different circumstances. I want to ask a general question about why special education. Why are these different opportunities for kids with different unique needs? Why are they so important? Like, why do we need as communities to support these kinds of programs in the first place? Julie?
Well, I would say, why do we need them? It's for the same reason why we need to include them in our communities beyond the age of 22. You know, as adults, they are a very important part of our community. And these services are what allow students who have disabilities to be contributing members of their community when they're adults, and it allows them to be more independent, especially for a student like my son, Brendan. If it weren't for the special education services that he got, if it weren't for the pull-out services, for the direct instruction, for the small groups, for the accommodations and modifications in the classroom, he wouldn't be able to achieve as much as he does and will be able to.
Teresa Holt?
Oh, well, I think it's important to remember where we came from. Before we had the IDEA, children with disabilities weren't allowed in school. They didn't have the right, like all other children, to go to school. And so what happened quite often was that they were put in institutions. And we know from history that once you live in an institution and you start to form to that institution's way of life, it's very difficult to change. And Alaska doesn't have any institutions, but in many states, they have institutions which house thousands of people at one time. And so I think to understand that we came from that kind of scenario to parents asking, and it was a group of parents who got the IDEA passed to say, hey, we want our kids in school. They deserve to be educated like everyone else. And I think what's happened is that now we spend less money at the end of their life, because institutions are not cheap. It's generally $150,000 a year for one person. Mm. And now we have people who, you know, we've moved from that sort of scenario to people who are in our community. They're participating. They can hold jobs. You know, they can reach their potential. So I think it's really important to understand that we came from a long way since 1970.
Mm-hmm. And how, Julie Broyles, you're a special education teacher at a high school in Anchorage, and you're the operations director for the Governor's Council on Disabilities. Let me get this correctly.
And special education.
Okay, Governor's Council on Disabilities and Special Education. How do you both think that having children with special needs in schools, along with kids who do not have those same kinds of special needs, how does it affect the kids who are what maybe are called the mainstream kids when kids with special needs are mainstreamed with them in education? Teresa, I'll start with you.
Yeah, I think everybody has different needs, and that's really the way our society needs to open their mind and think. You know, I'm horrible with numbers. I would never make a great accountant. My husband is horrible with paperwork. If you make him do paperwork, and everybody has those things that they're not good at. In the same sense, everyone has things that they're really good at. And so I think integrating students with disabilities with the kids in the school, with all the other kids, with their peers, creates that sense of accepting everyone where they're at. And I think that's a really important concept, because everyone has something to contribute. And we just need to find out what that is and help them to be able to do that.
Mm-hmm. Julie.
I forgot the question.
The question was, and you are a special ed teacher, so maybe you do have, and you have a child who has special needs. How is it that when kids with special needs are in classrooms, how is it that they affect their peers who do not have special needs?
You know, I think that just their presence gives them opportunities to grow and to mature in ways that they wouldn't. You know, of course, when I was in school, you know, we didn't have any the special education students who were within our school, and I didn't get to interact with them. And I just happened to know a family through our family friends who had a son who had cognitive impairment, and he was the neatest kid, and I loved to play with him and take him on walks and read to him. And so I was fortunate in that I had that chance to be able to interact with him. And I think that what my son offers the other kids in his class is a chance to see that he's a pretty neat kid. And I think that they really enjoy being around him. And I think that they are able to not only express that they can accept him, but also that they can enjoy a friendship with him that they might not have the chance to otherwise.
Well, let me share this. At first glance, people often mistakenly categorize Hannah as a person who wouldn't be able to function either mentally or physically. She was born with cerebral palsy and has been in a wheelchair her entire life. But later this month, she's headed off to the University of Washington with a full scholarship from the Stamps Foundation for her leadership skills. She's now one step closer to achieving her goal of attaining greater independence, and she says she's up for the challenge. Anne Kaiser has more.
Hannah is small. Her arms slightly waver and her head moves subtly but continuously as she sits in her high-tech power wheelchair. Seeing this can be intimidating, and sometimes gets in the way of strangers getting to know her.
Or, for example, a lot of kids and even adults are scared to come up to me and ask me a question because they're afraid I'll be offended or something like that.
But she hopes once people find out it's okay to ask her questions and talk to her, that they'll learn something. Her dad sees it happening all the time.
I mean, people see Hannah coming. She's in a wheelchair, and there's a bit of pity that comes out or concern. And then when she opens her mouth or, you know, turns in a project, everybody's just continually blown away.
Because Hannah knows she has to put herself out there and to use her voice as an advocate for herself. Her parents, Mark and Janet, taught her that.
She's not given any assistance she doesn't ask for. At the same time, when she asks for something that we know darn well that she can do, we don't do it for her. We make sure she puts forth the effort to get the stuff she can done.
Between her father and myself and the rest of the family, we've always been very supportive of her to do things on her own. Just from day one, there's nothing you can't do. Just do it your own way. You need help, we're right here, but you're going to do this.
So in recent years, they've wanted her to manage her own schedule and try to be as independent as possible. It doesn't always work out. Sometimes, even after making call after call, her staff doesn't show up or she's left waiting for public transportation. But she doesn't give up. Now that she's heading off to college, there's even more for her to do.
I had to coordinate travel, doctors, where I was going to live, figuring out how to get around, figuring out school, how to get, therapy and exercise, and also how to relax a little bit and have some fun.
One of her favorite parts of this process was finding out about her brand new dorm room, because everything about it is accessible, something she's never had.
I'm so excited. They have modified a double room to make it accessible. They put in a couple of extra railings and so that I can be more independent with getting up and moving myself from place to place, as well as an accessible shower and bathroom that's huge. And everything is electronically secured.
Hannah also helped arrange the transfer of one of her personal staff, Shauna Lowe, to join her in Seattle. She's been helping Hannah for almost a year now with things like personal care, lifting and transferring her when needed, and companionship.
I just kind of go in, tell her, okay, this is what we need to do to get done. This is what I know you need to do. And then after that, in between everything, we sit there and just have fun.
Hannah knows this process of becoming independent has been good for her, but she can't help getting frustrated sometimes, especially when her dad said he wouldn't sign off on her scholarship a few days before the deadline.
You know what? I don't care if he says I have to wait another year. I'm not going to let this opportunity go away. It's too good, and it's too meant to be. So I looked at the form. I said, wait a minute. It doesn't need a signature. The only signature it needs on here is mine. So I signed it, and I went and mailed it off.
I wasn't going to let her accept the financial help without all her ducks in a row. When she said she wanted to go away to school, she can go anywhere she wants if she does it. Because when she gets there, it's with her issues, she can't just call mommy or daddy and get it fixed.
As much as she struggles with the pressure of her day-to-day life, Hannah recognizes she wouldn't be where she is today if she didn't believe that anything's possible.
No matter what anyone says, whether my family, my teacher says you can't do it, well, no, you just gotta find another way.
Her parents say it will be scary to watch Hannah go off to this strange new city, but neither one will show their fear. Instead, they'll try to let go and trust in her and everything they've taught her.
The road is so wide open for this kid, this young woman, and Seattle's going to be fantastic for her, but she's going to exist in this world just along with everybody else and excel. And I'm very proud of her for that.
We've tried to tell her, and, you know, we are hard at home and we butt heads, but just how proud we are, all of us, how awestruck we are in what she's accomplishing and how much we love her.
Hannah's first day of class is the 28th of this month. She's making her way towards her dream job of writing a travel blog to document accessibility and social issues around the world. For Kids These Days, I'm Ann Kaiser.
And we will do our best to link to that blog whenever it's live and up and running. I'm Shanna Sheehy. This is Kids These Days. And today I'm talking with Teresa Holt and Julie Broyles about special education in Alaska. First, I'd like to see if there's any reaction either of you would like to give to that piece about Hannah, who's on her way to college.
Yay, Hannah. That was so exciting. I loved hearing her story. And I think that's just kind of the a dream of every parent who has a child with special needs. That's what you want. You want your child who's going to be so determined to reach their goal that they will sign their own form and turn it in and make something like that happen. That's exciting.
And a slightly different tack. Education is, you know, it's comprised of many different subjects. Like there's academics, which, you know, if you do well and you can go off to college and so on and so forth. But there's all sorts of other things that go into education, like arts programs, music programs, physical education and so forth. What kind of opportunities do our school districts offer to children who have special needs for those kinds of programs? In particular, maybe we can start with physical education. I'm curious about that. Julie?
Obviously it depends on the child. You know, some kids, because of any physical disabilities that they may have, they may require adapted PE.
Mm-hmm. Can you describe what that is, adaptive PE?
What that would look like is we have our APE teachers who are specialized in providing physical education programming for a student who has a physical disability. That could be in a small group. They'll be doing similar skills, but with some accommodations, whether that's with the size of the equipment or the type of the equipment or, the way that they do an activity. But most of our students are able to do the regular PE classes, mm-hmm. as far as high school they are, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Teresa Holt, do you have any knowledge of other types of programs like that and what kinds of adaptions there might be in arts or that kind of thing?
Well, I think, you know, the idea of programs mm-hmm. gets us away from what special education is, which is individualized education. Mm-hmm. And so that's why it's specialized, because we're looking at a particular student and we're designing a program around that child.
That includes all of those things.
Right.
Always.
So it could be, I mean, so each child has something totally different. There's not necessarily a specific program for art.
Mm-hmm.
It would be, here's a child at this school, here's the art program we have, here's the teacher, here's the resources. Let's look at how can this child participate in the art classroom. If they don't like art, they don't want to do it, maybe it's a grade school classroom and they don't like tactile things, then maybe they're doing some other kind of project. And so it really goes back to that individual need.
And ladies, in the time that we have left on the program, I'd like to make sure that there isn't any information that caregivers might need out there that's missing from what we've already talked about.
I did want to talk about transition in the other sense. Youth, young adults who are in high school transitioning to adult life.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's some very interesting things happening in our state and very exciting things. Alaska just recently got a grant to create a tapestry program, which will be for seniors in high school, whether they be 18 or 21, because kids with disabilities can go to school till they're 21.
Okay.
They work on transition skills to that adult life. And those adults who are going to go thinking about that they might want to go to college can enroll in the Tapestry program. And it's specifically for folks who have developmental disabilities. But they take classes on campus, they audit some classes, they take classes to learn how to get around campus, how to take notes, all those kind of skills that you might need to be successful in college. And then at the end of their year or 2 years, then they make a decision about whether maybe they're going to go on to college full time. And or, you know, maybe go part time, take some classes and work towards a degree, or whether they want to look at some kind of vocational services to get a job and training for a job. So I think that's a very exciting thing that we haven't talked about.
Mm-hmm.
And under the IDEA, all children starting at age 16 have, in addition to their or as part of their IEP, they have a transition plan. And it looks at independent living skills, vocational skills, you know, how to do your laundry, how to cook, how to plan your money, all those kind of things. And so I just wanted to add that piece in because I think it's a really important part of the IDEA.
And once that transition piece begins happening, caregivers, do they have access to additional resources that are separate from what we already provide in our school setting once a child or a young adult in this case is 21 or 22 and has moved through that transition and is in a new phase?
At that point, they have to be eligible for adult services.
Okay.
And those are broken up differently. And so not every child who's in special ed will be eligible for adult services. There's services for individuals who have a developmental disability from senior and disability services. There are services for folks who have physical disabilities and need a personal care attendant to help them do things. For example, I'm sure this young lady, the person who helps her, goes to school with her, takes notes, those kind of things. For folks who have a mental illness of some sort, there are services set up for that. But there is a whole group of folks who, once they become adults, they're not actually eligible for services.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would like to thank both of you so much for spending your time on our program today. Teresa Holt is the Operations Director at the Governor's Council on Disabilities and Special Education. And Julie Broyles is a special education teacher at Service High School in Anchorage and serves on the Governor's Council on Disabilities and Special Education. It's really been a pleasure to speak with both of you today.
Thanks for having
us. Thank
you.
Our regular essayist and weekly blogger, Erin Kirkland, often shares her great ideas for traveling with kids in the 49th state. From river rafting to flight seeing to good old-fashioned camping, she does her best to make suggestions that are both fun and simple. What's not simple? She says vacationing with special needs kids. Erin shares an intimate perspective in this next piece, recalling a family RV trip she took with her husband and two sons, one of whom is autistic.
After our family's first Alaskan vacation with two sons, one of whom is on the autism spectrum,
I returned home with mixed reviews about our experience. It's hard to embark upon a truly vacation-y vacation with a disabled child. Exhausting, even. There, I said it. I thought my son, MJ, who thrives on facts and wanders the planet like a living history book, would enjoy 10 days spent exploring the Kenai Peninsula. I planned for hours to make our RV home away from home a comfortable, safe, and familiar haven. I posted our chore chart on the RV door. I remembered to stockpile favorite books in the cab over sleeping area, and I even let him bring the Game Boy. I was more prepared than Christopher Columbus, more organized than Lewis and Clark. I left nothing off the list, no item unpacked. What I had forgotten was my son. Kids with autism find routine their biggest ally in a world that appears drastically different from they. For the majority of us, vacations are a chance to break out of the routine. So, as much as we wanted to escape the day-to-day grind, our son wanted desperately to return to it. Adding to the difficulty was a collection of extra people with us. So, after about 3 days of rapidly escalating hysteria, on my part, not my son's, a family meeting was called and some decisions were made concerning the real goal of this endeavor. Who were we here for, anyway? The kids? Us? Our youngest was a mere toddler and could have cared less about where we were going, just as long as we were all together. MJ was 12 and liked to study intricate innards of community museums and their gift shops with equal and rapt concentration. If we really wanted a relaxing vacation, we realized, it wouldn't be here and now. So, we regrouped, whittling down a busy itinerary that allowed more time for MJ to find his own way and our youngest to hear less stress in our voices. The accompanying company was released to their own amusements, and over the course of 5 days, we forgot about agendas meaningful to us as tourists and focused instead on what would bring joy to a son who often finds so little to be joyful about in the world around him. We let MJ start the evening campfire and eat marshmallows until he was a mess. We provided Ziploc bags for sticks and rocks and seashells that would, over the years, accumulate into an impossible pile under our deck. My husband took him to see Pirates of the Caribbean at the Homer Theater because it was really, really important to see it that day. We adjusted, we shifted, we adapted, and as we drove wearily home, the only thing I could think about was my bed, a good book, and a big glass of Merlot in thankfulness that we all survived. MJ had one final request, though, as we jockeyed 28 feet of camper into the driveway. "Can I sleep in the RV tonight by myself?" he asked. "Why not?" And so he was happy. Very, very happy. It's all in the perception, I guess.
That was Erin Kirkland. You can read her blog for us, KTD On The Go, at our website, kidsthesedays.org. We'll link you to Erin's own page from there as well. That's it for today's show. I'd like to thank our in-studio guests, Teresa Holt and Julie Broyles. Kids These Days had help this hour from Ann Kaiser, who reported from Anchorage. Sarah Gonzalez is our online wizard and Kids These Days producer. Jessica Cochran contributed from KTD's Early Education Desk, a new collaboration supported by this program and the statewide nonprofit organization Thread. Jessica is also this program's assistant producer and technical editor. I'm Shanna Sheehy, your host. I look forward to seeing you again next week.
The ideas, opinions, and commentary you hear on Kids These Days are those of the hosts, guests, and contributors, and do not necessarily represent the opinions of its funders or broadcast partners. The Content Producers Guild is solely responsible for what you hear on the program. Kids These Days is made possible by a generous grant from the Association of Alaska School Boards and its Initiative for Community Engagement. Kids These Days is produced in partnership with KSKA 91.1 FM Anchorage, KRUA, and the UAA Department of Journalism and Public Communications.